Hello, I'm Kelly Klinger. I am a former extra on the Mickey Mouse Club and was once a background singer for Britney Spears. I am a daughter, a sister, a wife, and a mother. I am a songwriter, a friend, a blogger, and a Christian. I am also a post-abortive woman who has lived with paralyzing self-hatred and suffocating guilt because of my choices. After finding healing in the arms of a loving God, I also found a resounding voice inside of me to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the unborn babies who are no longer safe inside the womb, and for the millions of women who are feeling the destruction and pain that abortion leaves in its path. Please join me for the Colorado March for Life on January 21st at 12 o'clock noon at the Colorado State Capitol as I honor my children in heaven and all of the lives that have been stolen by the abortion industry. Help us continue our fight to end abortion now and promote personhood in Colorado by adding your voice to mine. I hope to see you there.
Warning, warning, there's truth up ahead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob and your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Well, I'm excited that Kelly Klinger is coming to Colorado for a March for Life in a few weeks, couple weeks. So please mark your calendars. In fact, in a little bit, perhaps we'll play that again in a few minutes. But I'm going to want to play you a phone call, a voicemail that was left here first, somebody asking for money. And at the end of the call, they leave their phone number, and so my producer scrambled the numbers, so you won't be able to make out the original phone number for this woman's privacy. But we'll play this, and we'll talk about the calls that churches get for money, and that in and of itself is quite a story. There's the tragedy of another high school shooting, this one in Omaha. And in this case, the shooter has wounded two school officials, a principal and a vice principal, and one is in serious condition. And then the 17-year-old killed himself. And this, of course, is a great tragedy, and it reminds me of when Peter Boyles and Columbine principal Frank DeAngelis were on the radio, and they were lamenting Columbine tragedy, school shootings, and I was a caller. I called in, just a caller. Peter Boyles knows who I am. And I said, guys, I'd like to offer one suggestion. You're lamenting. What can we do? You can't stop crime. No, you can't. Not in this current phase of our human existence. You can't stop crime, but a big problem is that you guys teach, the public school system teaches kids that there are no absolutes, there's no absolute right or wrong, and they were very dismissive, even mocking of that suggestion. And so I'd like to talk about that a little bit later in the show also, and easily we could ask them, hey guys, was it absolutely wrong for this student to come in and point a gun at the principal and the vice principal and shoot them? Was that absolutely wrong, or is that just... If there's no such thing as absolute right or wrong, it's just a preference. Probably the vice principal, this woman who's in such serious condition, probably she would have preferred that he not do that. But was it just his preference versus her preference? Just their alternate opinions? Everybody has a right to their opinion. Or was it really wrong? Was it absolutely wrong? And if we have... voices of the community, like Peter Boyles over on KHAL Radio, and the principal of Columbine High School, Frank DeAngelis. We've got people like that who mock the notion that there's such a thing as absolute right and wrong that the schools should be teaching to children, students. Then, hey, is murder absolutely wrong? Well, there's no absolute right and wrong. Question authority. So our godless school system, it has no foundation. And it can't be fixed, but we could point out what's wrong with it and try to get moms and dads to rescue their kids out of the godless school system that we have in America. And also in Philadelphia, just outside of Philadelphia, a guy broke into a home 4 a.m. this week, and this woman was scared to death, found him, woke up with him standing over her bed. Turns out by the time he left, he stole her cell phone. And within an hour, the police caught him. And that's pretty cool, right? They accessed an app on her phone, a GPS app. And Cheryl got a new phone for Christmas. And she's trying to figure out how it works. And she clicks on the map and zooms in with the satellite view. And there's our home. There's the kid's trampoline. There's our home. And then she zooms in close enough so that our home fills the whole screen. And she's sitting on the couch, and it looks like, according to the GPS, she's sitting at the kid's chess table. And she says, look at that. It thinks I'm on just on the other side of the room. It's pretty good, huh? So technology helps us, but I can't wait until we have a valid criminal justice system in America. For today, it's no longer a justice system. Now it's just a system. But one day there will be a valid criminal justice system here. And then all the security precautions we take, locks on our doors and all, that'll just be icing on the cake. Won't really be needed. But it'll be okay, but just icing on the cake. Okay, so now let's go to this. We've gotten hundreds of calls. Usually we answer them. We get them live. Once in a while, they leave a voice message. And there's not anything especially interesting about this call. This is just a typical call. Now, churches get many calls from strangers asking for money all year long. You might think they get more during Christmas time, but no, these people are out buying presents and going to Christmas parties and drinking. So you don't get more calls during Christmas time, as far as our experience in the last 10 years. And we also get a lot of calls here because we have a daily radio show, so that adds to the mix. And you can often tell that the people asking for money routinely call many, many ministries, organizations, and basically they're professional beggars, or at least they're trying their hand at it. And that's sad because they make it harder for people who are really deserving of compassion. And of course, when you give compassion to someone who doesn't deserve it, that's very possibly really easy for you to do, but it could harm them and even help to destroy them. So not caring about wisdom, when people come to you for help, one of the easiest things in the world to do is just give them money. And hey, you feel good about yourself and you've gotten rid of them and you are helping to destroy them, but you don't care because you feel good. A lot of folks are in that dangerous place. And so the stories of those who call in are oftentimes designed to answer all of your possible objections in advance. Sometimes they're very detailed and interesting. So this one is just a typical call, but let's hear it.
My name is Patricia. I got your number from Cover to Cover. In priority, I need help with my rent, electricity, and gas cards. If you're thinking about ARMS, they helped me at the end of January last year, so they can't really help me till the end of January this year. Even small increments would help, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, something like that. I obviously do have some money. I wouldn't expect one institution to pay for the whole thing, but all my bills are due this week, and it's just a rough time at the end of the season like this. So anything you could do to help me would be greatly appreciated. Again, my name is Patricia, 720-440-4905, 204-440-4905. Thank you.
You're welcome, Patricia. Okay, so it's typical. And imagine at your work, I don't know what you do, but imagine you're at your desk and the phone rings and you answer the phone and there's someone you don't know, a total stranger, telling you about their tragic life, the mess that they're in, and that they need money. And if you're a nice person, you're going to give them money. They might want it sent to their PayPal account or wired to a checking account or, you know, all different ways, of course, you could get money to them. And by the way, they'll accept your money in small increments, preferably small unmarked bills, 5, 10. It's like a fundraising letter, right? You get a fundraising letter, and you might be thinking, well, money's tight, you know, and I like this ministry, but money's tight. So they put $5, $10, $20. So you don't have to think, oh, I got to give $100. You could give $5 or $10. That'll help. So she includes that, you know. Small increments are accepted, $5, $10, $15, all the way up. But we don't expect any one institution. We're an institution at Denver Bible Church. We're an institution. We might never have realized that, but we are officially now an institution. And all of her bills are due this week, so that's pretty good. She's concerned about her bills. That's not bad. Our bills are due every week. Somehow our bills don't all come at one. They're due every day. We've got bills around here due every day. But all of her bills are due this week, and you can't say that she's not working because she probably puts a couple hours a day into calling people asking for money. That's hard work. I'm being facetious. She's not really working. And they often say, so many of them say, someone referred me to you. Someone referred me. Now, she mentioned whatever it was, some ministry, and slurred a little bit. But Carpenter's Cup, blah, 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 blah. Referred me to you, or they'll say someone in your church suggested that I call. And so when you have a church, they don't know how many people go to your church. And if you have a church of 1,000 people, it's harder. Denver Bible Church, we have about 100 people. They'll say, oh, who referred you to us? And she wants to point out, you know, I need money for rent, electricity, gas cards, plural, if you noticed, plural, right? Not a gas card, but gas cards, plural. And so what I often say, if Patricia had reached us and not our voicemail, well, let me ask this. Should we help her? Should we help Patricia? So our phone number here, 1-800-8-NYARDS. Should we help Patricia? There are a lot of people like Patricia. Well, I don't know her, so I don't know how like they are, but there are a lot of people like that who will call and ask for money. So what are your thoughts on that? And I could share our thoughts with you. 1-800-8-NYARDS. So we have this tragedy in Omaha, Nebraska, of yet another school shooting, and this 17-year-old shot the principal and the vice principal. The vice principal is a woman, and she's in critical condition, and the principal is in stable condition. And then he went out to the parking lot, I think it was, in his car, and killed himself. It's not unusual that human beings hurt one another. That's what we do. We hurt one another because we're in rebellion against God. That's not unusual or surprising. It's tragic. It's the state that we're in. People, liberals, think that people are basically good. And those who believe in God and that God has revealed himself to us through his word, we recognize that there was the fall of mankind in the garden, in the paradise that God gave to us. And ever since then, with sin and death entering the human experience, we are in rebellion against God, and we hurt him. We hurt ourselves. We hurt one another. So that's not especially shocking that someone would try to hurt other people. But what is completely unacceptable and unnecessary is that voices of the community, like Columbine Principal Frank DeAngelis and Peter Boyles, would reject the council, the observation that one of the things wrong with our government schools is that they teach that there's no absolute right and wrong. And I remember Peter Boyle's objection. He brought up the death penalty. And he said, well, Bob, what are we going to say about the death penalty? Right? Some people, you probably think it's good. Frank might think it's bad. Well, we're going to teach there's absolute right and wrong? And I had an answer immediately prepared for Peter Boyles, and he hung up on the call. He's the talk show host. He can do that. And I was going to say, Peter, far worse than telling the students that there's a debate over the death penalty is telling them there is no right or wrong. There is no right or wrong regarding whether you put to death this person. Whether or not the government puts this person to death, there is no right or wrong. That is moral depravity. And that's where you get with an evolutionary, godless worldview, an atheistic worldview. Let's go to the phones. Colorado Springs, 1-800-836-9278. Paul, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hi, Bob. I am very glad that you're on this subject about giving money to people who ask for it, because is something that's kind of always bothered me. And I guess the two things that I try to balance is, one, where Jesus gives the story about Lazarus and the rich man and how Lazarus was laid outside the rich man's house day after day after day.
Right.
And then they both died and went to heaven, and the rich man was judged for not helping out Lazarus.
Right.
And then
so somebody who's truly in need, like Lazarus, if he's covered in boils, right?
Right.
We have people today who say, I'm permanently disabled. And they try to get on permanent disability, whatever in the world that would be. And, I mean, they're on the internet, they're doing emails, they're on the phone, they're managing their own application for permanent disability like a professional. And they say, I can't work. Whereas if somebody truly is laid up, you know, say you are covered in boils from head to toe that you can't function, then you're a person who truly is in need. But we have a problem in America that there's no shame. There's no shame anymore. And so perfectly able-bodied folks or folks who could work would rather not work, deal with alcohol, drugs, enjoy those, and just beg for money.
And I would agree with that. And then there's one other passage, and that is where Paul is talking to Peter in the council, and they admonished him to make sure that he's remembering the poor. And they didn't really put any disclaimers on it. I mean, they didn't say, well, this poor or that poor. I mean, just remember the poor.
Well, does God love the poor?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he loves everyone. He recognizes that much of our suffering is from our own doing.
Right.
Like, Paul, if my suffering, if I only suffered because of the harm other people did to me, I would be so happy. I'd be dancing on my kitchen table every night. But much of the suffering in my life is because of my own sin, because of what I have done wrong, and I've hurt people I love, I've grieved God. And so the same is true with poor people. There are many, many, many poor people who are poor because of their own sin.
Right.
Then there are others, including children, who are not suffering in poverty because of their own sin. And so we need wisdom, right, as human beings, to know when will giving someone money hurt them and when will it help them. And that is a very difficult determination. And it's not one that institutions or organizations make well. Did you notice this woman said, I can't go back to this group until the end of January because they helped me last January and I got to wait. So now I need other institutions to fill in the gap. So let's stand in the gap for Patricia.
No, I don't think I'm going to send her a check.
Yeah, right. And so, Paul, one of the things I say to folks who call is, one of the first things I say is, wow, I think you should tell your family and friends that you're going through this and that you're in need. Because here they are calling a total stranger, asking a stranger for help. And usually they're 30, 40, 50 years old. And you should tell your family. And then they trip, you know, that catches them totally off guard. They trip over themselves. They don't know what to say. They might get mad. They might hang up within 30 seconds. But they'll come up with some excuse why they can't tell their family or friends, or doing that would have no effect. And so I asked them, how could you have arrived at this point in your life where you're 40 years old and you don't have a single friend who cares about your state, your condition? You have no family? How do you have no family? Pretty much everybody's had a mom and a dad, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins. And some people have small families. Some people have no family. That's extremely rare. But every person who's struggling has no family? And, you know, do you remember, Paul, where the Apostle Paul gave a command in the New Testament, and he said, he who will not work shall not eat?
Right.
That's not a suggestion. Paul says it's a command.
Well, that also, wasn't he speaking about those who would be on, like continuing subsistence? So somebody that's, like, he's talking about bringing in widows and that, you shouldn't bring in widows, and he gives a criteria for that. And he's talking about ongoing subsistence versus, like, one-time help relief.
Well, let's say, for example, that there is a natural disaster, like a tornado wipes out a town. Then should Christians be willing to help those who are in need?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, right? There's no doubt. Even atheists, you know, everybody's ready. Atheists don't tend to run soup kitchens and rescue shelters, you know, not with their own money. They'll take money by force through government and set up bureaucracies to help the people that they'd rather not help themselves. But Christians have set up, you know, enormous efforts all over the world to help those during a crisis like that. And then there are those ministries that I think are misdirected that give people sustenance help. And Paul warned against that, didn't he? Even with a widow in your own church, the conditions he laid out were very severe, to the point that very few widows would ever qualify to have sustenance help given from their church. Would you agree with that?
I would.
Yeah, like, for example, he said, well, if she has family, then you don't give her money. And why would he say that? You know, some people might think because he was rotten, but Christians know that the Holy Spirit inspired the apostles to write the books of the New Testament. So this is from God. This is God's word. So it's not because he was mean. What, Paul, why do you think he would say, if the widow has family, don't include her in any kind of sustenance?
Because it was the family's responsibility first.
Right, and so what if the church helped her even though she had kids and grandkids? What would happen to her family?
Well, they wouldn't have the opportunity to help or to be a part of meeting that need.
Right, and it would hurt them. Because here's their mom, here's mom, and we're not taking care of mom. Strangers to us are, or her neighbors, or her churches, or the government is, but we're not helping mom. So it destroys mom's family to sustain her in her needs when she has a family. So everyone might look for the lazy and the easy solution, but God is wiser than the whole bunch of us put together. So God says you don't do that. It might make you feel good to give out money, but it will hurt this woman's family, and she might want the money too, but it will hurt her and hurt her family. So wisdom says, if she's If she's not beyond life expectancy, that's what Paul wrote. If she has any family, if she's not had a strong Christian testimony through her life, then you should not be giving her sustenance. That's tough love, but it's love. And the misguided compassion is apathy or selfishness or lust. I want to feel good, and I'm going to give this alcoholic on the corner, I'm going to give him money, even though God warns me not to, because he's a professional drunk, and he should be working, and God gave him a system of digestion where hunger is a gift from God. And when he gets hungry, he'll go to work, but I'm going to give him money so he can get another cheeseburger and another beer and stay a professional drunk. So that's the challenge, Paul.
So where do you draw the line between a one-time gift to somebody who's really has a need and somebody who you wouldn't give money to?
Generally, when people come across my life, when I come across their path, they come across my path, then I ask God for enough love for my neighbor to find out enough to use wisdom to know whether I'd be helping or hurting. And usually I'll ask them to do some work. Could you do some work? And, you know, they have signs. We'll work for food.
Yeah, and those are lies.
Those are lies. Paul, for years, I had a sign in the trunk of my car, and it said, he's lying with an arrow. And I'd go and stop and ask them. One of my sons is here in the studio. He remembers us protesting the homeless people. I'd go and ask. I'd say, I got a truck to unload. Come and help me. And at the end of the day, you can take as much food as you can carry. You know, we'll work for food. Oh, no, I got a dentist appointment. Oh, no. Whatever excuse, and they won't do it. So then we get our sign, he's lying, and protest him on the street corner. So people won't give money to kill him on the installment plan so they feel better about themselves. So I think that's all part of the package of what God expects from us. Enough love and concern that if we're going to give, we're going to find out, how do I give? And I don't want to hurt this person so I can feel good about myself. Hey, Paul, we're out of time.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it.
May God bless you. And I'm looking forward to the March for Life and meeting Kelly Klinger on Friday, January 20th, is it? 21st. We're going to have a great time at noon at the Capitol.
Hello, I'm Kelly Klinger. I am a former extra on the Mickey Mouse Club and was once a background singer for Britney Spears. I am a daughter, a sister, a wife, and a mother. I am a songwriter, a friend, a blogger, and a Christian. I am also a post-abortive woman who has lived with paralyzing self-hatred and suffocating guilt because of my choices. After finding healing in the arms of a loving God, I also found a resounding voice inside of me to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the unborn babies who are no longer safe inside the womb, and for the millions of women who are feeling the destruction and pain that abortion leaves in its path. Please join me for the Colorado March for Life on January 21st at 12 o'clock noon at the Colorado State Capitol as I honor my children in heaven and all of the lives that have been stolen by the abortion industry. Help us continue our fight to end abortion now and promote personhood in Colorado by adding your voice to mine. I hope to see you there.